This is CliffCentral.com.
All right. Are you ready to meet the Vice President and General Manager for BBC Worldwide Africa, Mabali?
Yes, please.
Okay. Are you ready to talk about the lives and lifestyles of the rich and famous, like Robin Leach used to tell us about in the 1980s? Lifestyles of the rich and famous. Do you remember that?
I don't know.
You don't remember that show?
No, I don't.
He used to travel around the world and he would meet really, really rich people and really famous people, and he would show you their houses and their yachts and their cars and talk about their lives. And it was fascinating because you got to see how these people lived. And you thought, what? People live like that? That's incredible. Well, here's Joel Churcher. Hey, Joel, how are you?
Like the fanfare, that's nice.
Yeah,
thank you.
We felt like we needed to make a fuss of you,
special,
you know?
Guest.
Yeah. We don't do that for everyone, by the way. Don't get ahead of yourself.
I feel special.
Well, you know what? We're all going on holiday soon, and a lot of people are, a lot of people are just saying, there's no goddamn money. We can't do anything. But there are people in the world who have so much money, they don't know what to do with it.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, we've got a season on BBC Brit on Channel 120, which really follows the 1% of the wealthiest people.
And Bernie Sanders' worst enemies.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a series of a series of programs which runs. Yeah. It's been running for a while, but it runs all the way through December and January. But if I give you an idea of exactly some of the shows, so The Rich Kids of Social Media follows super, super wealthy young kids. And when I say kids, they're 16, 17 years old. And they've got so much money. One girl, for example, she has her own professional photographer to follow her around, so to put the photos on Instagram.
Oh my God.
And she complains about backgrounds.
What a terrible, terrible human being this is going to turn out to be. When she gets to the... When the real world meets her at some point, and it will, because she'll probably run out of money, people like that tend to do that. They spend so much that they think it's a bottomless pit. Yeah. Ultimately, when you're stupid, money does run out.
Well, their philosophy is, you know, you match your watch with your car with your shoes. And if I say one of these 17-year-olds drives a gold Maserati, you kind of get a picture of what he might look like.
A douchebag. Am I right? Okay, so this is fascinating because... First of all, what kind of parents agree to let your people come in and film this?
Well, probably absent parents, I'd imagine.
because surely, I joked with the two guys that I had in here a while ago from the revenue service, and I said to them, listen, all you have to do to find out who's cheating you is to get on the internet and look at the social media accounts of these kids and see what their parents' house looks like, see what car they drive, because everybody boasts all over social media. You'll never find anyone hiding anything from the tax man on Instagram. And these shows like Rich Kids, where these kids are flaunting how much money their parents have. Meanwhile, their parents have put on their tax return that they're a simple, humble managing director of a small branch in Krugersdorp. How does this happen?
Well, I mean, that's a really interesting point, because one of the other shows is Trillion Dollar Island, which is follows the super wealthy living in the Cayman Islands. Now, the Cayman Islands, as we know, is in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
It's purportedly a tax haven, although that's not how they present themselves.
Sure.
But that's where a lot of this happens. So to answer your question, there's probably a lot of wheeling and dealing and hiding. I read yesterday that there is actually now a Rich Kids app. It costs $1,000 a month. But it's so you have to be rich to actually play part of it. But that's where you can interact with other super rich kids, and literally it's a sport now. It's you showing I've bought my drophead Phantom for £500,000. Mm. What have you got?
We're on the yacht this Christmas. Where are you peasant?
Exactly, that's exactly that. There's a 24-year-old that we follow who's got his own private jet, and if I tell you his dog has a Louis Vuitton suitcase.
Well, these people are really...
Oh, my God.
I mean, these people are spitting and pissing in our faces, aren't they? Aren't they really?
Well, I'm not subscribing to the app, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's unreal. Look, when we talk about billions, that is so much money that you'd have to work very hard at spending enough every day to even make a dent in it.
Well, it's interesting that one of the kids goes on a shopping spree and he only spends $10,000. And for him, he's like, well, you know, it's a light shopping day for me. We asked one of the girls, what do you think the average person spends on shopping? And she said about 80,000 rand a week. That's what she thinks the average pleb, shops with. And so, yeah, you're right. They don't really have a proper concept of money. And a lot of it, I'll be fair, some of it comes through their own entrepreneurial work. Some of the kids have been, they've been lucky in creating sort of, they're in the IT game, so they've created.
Made games.
Yeah, exactly that. But a lot of them are, you know, clearly are heiresses and heirs. And the Turkish chap who has his own private jet, his father is a multi billionaire Turkish property tycoon. So that's where he gets his money from.
How do you select these people? Because there are a lot of rich people to choose from. You look for stories that are the most interesting?
We find them on Instagram. As you said, they're not shy in coming forward.
And what sort of things do they do besides spending money? I mean, what do they do for fun? Do these people have real relationships? Do they have real friends? Do they? Because I imagine some of the time when you have that kind of money, everyone is pretending to be your friend. It's very hard to find real relationships and to make them work.
Yeah, in fact, that comes up a lot. And what you'll find is particularly some of the young men, you know, their best friend is their dog. Yeah. And then you look at some of the other some of the young people that we followed, and they're really new at it. I mean, there's one show that we've got called My Millionaire Dads and Me, and they buy their 16-year-old son a Porsche, a 2-4 million rand Porsche for his 16th birthday, but he can't drive it. Mm. So he sits in it with his mate, and they sort of, you know, and they compete about who's got the most money, but it's not real for them. It's like when you're a 4-year-old and you're sat in outside the supermarket in one of those cars that you obviously you're not driving.
I mean, you might as well actually go and sit in the showroom.
Yeah, and one guy's got a fleet of cars. He's 17. He's got a fleet of Bentleys, but he's not insured to drive any of them. So they actually come with their own driver.
Oh, this is great. What an awesome idea for a show. Because it makes ordinary people who don't have 80,000 rand a week to spend on shopping, makes us feel quite normal. Makes us feel quite lucky in a way, because you see the burdens that money can bring too. And you see how ridiculous some of these people are.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I'd still rather be me than them.
Well, one girl claims that, you know, she says, I love money. Money is my bestie. And you kind of think she's missing out.
Shame. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Do you guys, when you put these shows together, obviously you have production companies that go out and make the actual shows. But have you found that because of social media, all of this is so much more amplified than it might have been, you know, 10 years ago, because now there's a discussion after the show about what goes on the show.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? It works in our favor.
And sometimes the people in the show are the ones who are driving that conversation.
Yeah. And it works in our favor.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is where, you know, the second screen technology of TV has really helped TV promote its brands. I don't know if you, I'll just skip to Planet Earth 2. I don't know if you've heard about Planet Earth 2.
We've got it. Listen.
We
this is apparently the
yet.
Greatest show.
There you go.
And this has actually done something which very few shows of that genre have done. It's captured young people's attention.
Exactly.
It's got the attention of these millennials who are perpetually distracted. And people are suddenly, for the first time, unbelievable to people like me, but for the first time they're discovering Sir David Attenborough.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're bringing this on Channel 184 in February, I believe, on BBC Earth. But I'll just tell you, on Sunday night, just back to your question, Gareth, on Sunday night, the Planet Earth 2, the final, it sounds a bit weird to call it the final of Planet Earth 2, but it is real, it's tentpole TV, it's a real sort of, you know, it's great opportunity to watch this stuff. But that pulled in more viewers on Sunday night than the X Factor final.
Great. I hate reality TV.
Yeah. But isn't that amazing that kids are now flicking from X Factor, Simon Cowell, onto Planet Earth 2, David Attenborough.
Right. Good.
Yeah,
good.
Pulled in 10 million viewers or something.
This is terrific news. You just made my day.
And also, the reason why I mentioned it, because you mentioned social media, was the baby iguana and the snake sequence, which is completely viral. And I watched an interview with Hans Zimmer, who did the music for that sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, Hans Zimmer, he's the great composer who's done for lots of Hollywood films. And the way he sort of went about it, he said that this, for me, was the best car chase scene without a car, and I thought that was a great sort of metaphor for exactly that. I mean, it's great to be, but social media's done that.
Isn't it incredible how people can now interact and engage about stuff like this, where before it was impossible? I mean, you'd maybe sit with your family and talk about it afterwards. And television really hasn't become the device. It's not something that lives on a wall in a television room in people's houses. It's now something you carry around with you. Are you guys worried with all this brilliant content that you make, that a lot of it is being pirated, that a lot of it is being downloaded illegally, that you aren't necessarily – you pay a lot to have a show like Planet Earth 2 made. That must cost millions of pounds.
Yeah, a lot of blood, sweat and tears as well. I mean, these guys sit in trees and follow orangutans for like 4 years to get the right shot. Yeah, no, it's a big problem. And it's not just in Africa, piracy, but it's all over the world. I mean, if I give you a story, quite an interesting one, back at the BBC in London, we were given a nice example of what we're doing to combat that. It's quite difficult to try and track some of these pirates. And I don't know how you imagine what they look like, but what we found was 10 satellite dishes in a back garden in Surrey beaming whole channels around Europe. And of course, the BBC, as you know, is paid for by the license fee. That's £3.7 billion a year that the BBC get. And it's there to really sort of develop British creativity and British TV making and radio. And that's there to serve the British public. BBC Worldwide, the subsidiary that I work for, we then distribute that content globally. But it needs to, you know, there's a value chain here, and there's stuff that we need to recoup, because, as you say, I mean, one of the things that we've noticed recently, particularly with the likes of Netflix and Amazon Prime, is the cost of content is so expensive now. Mm. I mean, these people are spending $3 million an episode. Now, you need to make that money back. So the cost of content has gone up significantly. And I think what a lot of people don't realize when they stream, or they don't realize that it's actually illegal. They assume that it's out there and they can just get it. And I think pirates are getting clever. You know, they assume, they say, if you pay me $10 a month and you think it is legal. But of course, if you're accessing stuff which isn't and shouldn't be available in this market because you need to watch it on a particular platform, it is illegal.
What sort of numbers do you guys manage to do on channels like BBC here in South Africa?
Well, I mean, we're on the DSTV platform.
Right.
So we're sort of...
There are hundreds of channels.
Yes, exactly.
So how do you manage to figure out what your share of that audience is?
Well, we get ratings. I mean,
And what are those like?
We're in the top 20. I mean, we're in terms of the international channels, we do very well. In terms of the whole media landscape, I would suggest that your free-to-airs, your SABC, ETV, and of course your big channels like MNET, they're the ones that have massive
appeal.
They get
more eyes,
of course.
But they don't necessarily get the target market that every advertiser is looking for.
Well, that's right. I mean, BBC is as a premium quality sort of content offering. We've got BBC Brit, BBC Earth, BBC First, and BBC Lifestyle. People know what they're getting on all of those channels. So we can be sort of a bit more selective on what content we choose and who's watching our channel.
So what sort of what's your day to day? I mean, do you go into the office and you have to make calls on what kind of programs you're going to sell to whom and to where and to why and to what and Is it for the whole of Africa?
Yeah.
Okay. So how does that work?
So I, as vice president for BBC Worldwide Africa, my role is to sell content. So you'll watch TV shows on other channels. You might even not know it's BBC, but friends like these, for example, on SABC, that's ours. We sell that to SABC.
Okay.
Strictly Come Dancing, that's ours. We sell that to SABC. You see a lot of natural history. You see stuff on other channels. There's some dramas you'll see on other channels.
So you guys really are in the business, if you had to pare it down as the BBC. And what's interesting is that our SABC should be a similar arrangement because it was based on the BBC.
I'm told it was modelled on the BBC.
The original idea. Where it is now is a whole different story.
I heard, yeah.
But let's just pare it all down to what its basic intention is, as you said, to develop British creativity and to give public service and public access to that kind of stuff. But essentially, it's about creating great content.
Exactly that. And you'll hear me, if people hear me in conferences, you'll hear me bang this drum quite loud. That what I think the BBC does really well is nurture creativity. There is no accident that if you turn on any film in the US or watch anything around the world, there's a British actor involved. And that's no accident. And that's not because we're the best actors in the world. It's because the British creative industries have nurtured that talent, both on screen and off screen. Script writers, filmmakers, producers, directors, and even on screen talent. And what the BBC worldwide particularly is very good at is investing in small, very young startup production companies. And we invest in them, a bit like Dragon's Den. We'll give you money, you give us 10% of your company. So that means that whatever they produce comes to us. And what they get from that is worldwide distribution. They also get the money to make the show. And we're pushing out British creativity around the world. So that, I think, is where the BBC really comes into play. And I think that's where a lot of people admire and respect the BBC because of that business model.
Yeah, and there are really great shows, and in the end, people fall in love with the shows. They don't fall in love with a channel.
Exactly. I mean, we got Bake Off.
About a channel.
We got we got Bake Off. We've got Strictly Come Dancing. I mean, Strictly Come Dancing is in 52 countries.
Oh, it's Ben's favorite show.
It's called Dancing with the Stars in most countries. So the one in the US, the big one, that's a BBC format that we sell to ABC. So you know, we're pretty omnipotent around the world in terms of ideas, creativity.
What's been your most profitable show?
I'd probably say, Top Gear.
Top Gear, huh?
Yeah.
And now Amazon are doing that with Google. They're not calling it Top Gear. They're calling it something else, but it's pretty much Top Gear.
Yeah, I mean, this is my chance
Clarkson
to clarify it.
Hand.
Yeah, this is my chance to say. So, they don't have Top Gear. Top Gear's a BBC property.
Right.
In actual fact, Jeremy Clarkson used to own equity in the brand Top Gear and sold it to BBC about 4 or 5 years ago. So it's now... He got paid handsomely, I'm sure, but it's now Top Gear, the brand, is a BBC brand. What they've produced is the Grand Tour. It's the three guys. It's on Amazon Prime. We don't have Amazon in this country. So actually, at the moment, Africans cannot watch that show. I don't know if they've got plans to sell it, but it's very big in the US, UK and Germany. But we still obviously own Top Gear. We've got Matt LeBlanc fronting our Top Gear.
Yeah, but no one cares.
Well, we got season 24 coming up in February, so
I've always had this argument with broadcasters, and in this case, you're selling it on, so you're not really even the broadcaster itself. So, don't mind my aggressive take on this. But without those guys, it's just another car show that you've put other presenters into their slots for. It doesn't. This is something that always has driven me mad about. Broadcasters in particular, is that they think they could just change the thing and they'll end up with the same result. And audience numbers show it's not doing as well.
Well, I have an opinion on this. Jeremy Clarkson hit somebody, a producer, and I'd much rather work for an organization that would sort of remove the talent, should I say,
but
because it holds up to its values.
Michael Jackson fiddled with children. But he made some great songs. And since I don't have children, I care about Michael Jackson's songs. So if he has to fondle someone else's children in order to make Billie Jean for me, I'm okay with that.
Allegedly. You have to use that word.
No, he read it, make Billie Jean.
Apparently you have to use that word.
You know what I mean. This is so difficult. And I'm not putting you in an awkward position,
I hope,
having to answer this. But Clarkson, Hammond and May made the show. Otherwise, it's just and there are brilliant producers and there are brilliant minds that help them to make that. But they were the front people. It's like a band. If they lose their lead singer, it's not the same band.
Yeah, well, as I said, we the way we say it is Top Gear is bigger than its presenters. And we've got another chance to show it in March. So season 24 comes back onto BBC. And just to clarify, it is actually a BBC. We're not selling it. We make it.
Broadcast it. I know. And you made it. I used to love Top Gear. I haven't even watched Grand Tour yet. So I'm not part of that.
Technically, you can't.
Well, exactly. There we go. That's part of the problem. Michael wanted to argue with you and me. So anyway, listen, let's talk some more about this billionaire bunch of shows that you're doing.
Yeah, there's,
apparently there's a South African or an African component to this.
Yeah, that was London to Lagos. Yeah. So that showed
Is that still going or is that done?
That was broadcast a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sure we'll bring it back. It was very popular. I mean, one of the things which is really interesting about that was it highlighted that Nigerians are the third richest nationality in London after the Chinese and the Russians. So, I mean, they're buying property, they're driving Ferraris. I mean, and their motto is, you know, if I own typical sort of a nice sort of young African entrepreneurial spirit, but they're saying, if I earn this money, why don't I spoil myself?
Right.
Because life, I don't want to be a slave to life. And who can argue with that, right?
I agree. I mean, maybe people have to make billions to figure this out, but it could be the secret to life that if you don't enjoy what you've got, whether it's a lot or a little, you're actually not living.
Mm, yeah.
There's some people who will die with billions and billions in the bank. And they've, like Warren Buffett, I don't understand this guy. He still lives in that same shitty house in Omaha, Nebraska. He drives that horrible old car. Everybody goes, I love Warren Buffett. He's so humble. He hasn't changed. Well, what's the point of being a billionaire if you don't at least buy yourself a new car after 17 years or whatever it was of driving that old horrible piece of shit in your driveway?
But what if what if Warren Buffett doesn't get turned on by things like
Fair enough. But
he gets turned on by other stuff that you might not
know
about.
Have you seen that house?
No.
It's terrible.
It's a bit like Susan Boyle, you know. She still feeds her cats in a small house up in Scotland. But you're talking about passion. I mean, there's another show we have called The Rise of the Super Gamer. Yeah. And this is, I've never heard of it before, but playing video games is now a sport. It's e-sport. And these people play in stadiums.
Yeah, more spectators for this than almost any other sport
exactly.
on the planet.
30 million people watch this. Other people play
Doesn't
video
this boggle
games.
Your mind?
And they win huge sums of cash. Mm. And some of these people, there's a training camp in Berlin. And they go to Berlin.
Whenever anyone says Berlin and camp in the same sentence, I start getting very worried.
12 hours they sit there and they practice these shoot 'em up games. And then they go into the stadium and then you've got roaring fans, you know, sort of spurring them on in order to, obviously they win money to do this. But, and these are young kids as well. They're 18, 19 years old. And they've dedicated their life to playing video games.
I gotta say, I love the BBC channels because to me there's always great quality content.
Thank you.
The quality of the content is just unsurpassed. It's almost as if the production value is everything the Americans wish they could do plus 100. And when you've got shows like Planet Earth 2, it's just head and shoulders above anything else in its genre. There isn't anything more beautiful. Every single frame is magnificent. The sound is beautifully done. You can see someone has paid attention to every last detail, and that's obviously why it's expensive to make. But isn't this also a great time to be in content production? Maybe not the easiest time to be in TV, because television is, it's fighting with the internet for attention. There are so many other ways for people to access content these days that TV is not what it once was. It used to have a much greater share of our general attention. But it is a great time because that stuff can live forever and it can be watched over and over again. And sometimes having a clip that goes viral, like with the iguanas and then the lizard, that stuff becomes an international event rather than just a TV show.
Exactly that. It's event TV. That's what we call it. And it's a very, very good point you make because, you know, if anybody's interested in getting into TV, I would say get into the idea stage, because everybody's now is fighting for intellectual property. Mm. That is where the money's at. US studios at the moment, they come to the table already with a package. They've got the scriptwriter, they've got the actor, the top actor, they've got the production crew, they've got everything. And they come to you with a package and say, here, go make this. And the likes of Netflix say, fantastic, here's your money, go make it. So it cuts out everybody. So, you know, in a world where if you own the IP, if you own the idea, you're still in the game. And that's
even if it's little.
Even if it's little. Look at Bake Off, right? It was a husband and wife team that came up with a baking show.
What a terrible idea.
They've just sold it.
Can you imagine anything more boring than watching other people bake?
Yeah.
What? Are you talking about the Great British Bake Off?
Well, the Bake Off. It's in 20 countries.
That's a huge show.
It's in 20 countries. It got 15 million viewers in the UK.
I know.
And they've just sold their show to Channel 4 for £75 million.
This illustrates the point very
They
well.
Own the idea.
It's brilliant.
They own the idea. That's really where BBC lost out in the UK. But as I said, what we're doing very successfully is we are finding those small companies that have the ideas. They're startups. They come to us. They're a young production company and they say, look, I've got an idea. If we like the idea, we buy the equity, we get the idea, and we broadcast and promote their show and their idea around the world.
I got a bunch of shows I want to pitch to you right now.
Okay,
all right. Mabs, do you want to go first?
No, I'm not pitching any shows.
Right, first idea is Meet the Troll.
We've got to make this.
This is a show I spoke to Tumi Muraki about this the other day. A year ago, and we were meant to put it together. Yeah. I've been lazy on the idea, but this has got potential. So there are all these people on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram who say just horrible things. But they're probably miserable people who live in their parents' house. They're in their 40s. They've never had sex. They probably look like shit. They're probably the most miserable, unhappy, unsatisfied people deep down inside. And yet they go on the internet and they abuse everyone else. I think that what we should do is find celebrities who've been abused and actually take a camera crew and go to these trolls' houses and meet them. And the celebrity should have the opportunity either to beat them up or to at least attack them verbally back and to see
confront
how they respond.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would bring a lot of people into a world of taking social media seriously.
Yeah.
There's huge
nice
scope.
Idea.
You like
well,
that?
Well, what was it? The US show? What was it? Was it the Late Show where they got the celebrities to read out?
Yeah,
some
mean
of the,
tweets.
Mean
that's
tweets.
That's Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. Yeah.
Now that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But this one would be
but
taking
did,
it up.
Did you
a
notice?
We
want to
know what the troll. They always hide behind those eggs and things.
Those celebrities look clearly upset by some of the things
they
were reading. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're not used to hearing things that aren't friendly and sycophantic. You know how celebrities are. Everybody kisses.
Okay, that's idea number one. What else you got?
There are lots
you
of
asked
ideas.
Me what I did all day.
But seriously now, what kind of chance, if someone had an idea for a TV show and they brought it to you, what sort of chance is there that you could get the BBC to go, okay, let's do this?
Yeah, I mean, we're a global organization, so we look at ideas from a global perspective. We've made quite a few shows that have really sort of from a central perspective flown around the world. So there's one show, Fishing Impossible. Three guys, they like fishing. We've made the show. They go to the most bizarre places around the planet. You know, and I don't think you watch it because you're interested in fishing. You watch it because these guys are either catching the most difficult fish to catch or the most dangerous. But these guys, I mean, one's a pilot, one's a marine biologist. It's not their day job to be presenters. But they came to us with the idea. We liked the idea. And now it's in like five, six countries around on BBC channels around the world. So it does work. And they even come here to Africa to film it as well.
How about a show? I want to do a show called Hierarchy, where we rank everyone on Earth in different we actually say you're the number one person, you're the number two, you're the number 312. So we would take philanthropists, we would take politicians, we would take celebrities, we would take sports people, and we'd actually create a ranking. It's almost like a who's who.
But what's the KPI ranking? Who was it? Money or status?
Well, this is the point. For each one, you have different. For some, you just have a rich list. For other ones, you have people who have influence, people who have societal power, you know, in terms of their ability to kind of command a tribe or to influence policy or to change the environment and all these kinds of things. And you actually create a ranking system for all humans. Can you imagine how that would annoy people? How everyone would watch to see where they fit in? You could get rich people to pay for the show.
Yeah, but we could get it sponsored probably, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
What is the secret ingredient, if you will, to knowing that a show is going to be successful? Because, you know, on paper, the idea of watching people bake, on paper it seems like, well, I mean, there's nothing interesting about that, but the Bake Off is such a big show.
So
what is that ingredient makes a show a hit?
I've sat in a few commissioning meetings, and do you know what? I have one word, and that probably sums it up. Jeopardy. If you create Jeopardy in a show, then it keeps people hooked.
Right.
And the baking is a great example of that. It's baking, but the Jeopardy is, I mean, we had one example where they dropped their cake on the floor when they pulled it out, boom, right? Jeopardy, right? And I think that for me, if you're going to look at something, and particularly if you're coming with a cooking show or, you know, where's the Jeopardy? Why as a viewer would you watch this show? What keeps you hooked? So I think that would be my advice. keep people hooked.
Here's a good idea. Who peed in the pool?
Oh, here we
go. You put a bunch of people in the pool, and because we all
think that one's been done.
We all think we know. Has it been done?
I don't know.
Well, it should be done. Listen, don't poo-poo my ideas.
Okay.
Here. And you have a bunch of kids in the pool, and then you have to place bets on it because everyone at home will be doing this.
The other thing I would say is,
and you reveal who the kid is who peed in the pool.
Great, great script writing is. Just moving on.
So clearly that one didn't work.
Great okay, script writing is probably the best. I mean, if you're a young writer and you can, you don't even need to write a full length screenplay, but if you can write a short, and particularly in as Gareth was saying, you know, social media is so popular at the moment with just actually watching short content. If you could create something that was really riveting and a great piece of writing, it could even just be about your life or something you've experienced. I think that's a way that you can get into TV as well, particularly through short form.
All right, hang on before you pitch your idea. Flax, I know you've got ideas you want to pitch as well, right? You can come in here. Your microphone doesn't work there. Remember, we've got a problem with the desk. Ben.
So reverse couples therapy, right? It's called couples couch. You get a perfectly functional, happy couple, and then you get a really charismatic shrink. Who's also a bit devious. So they talk about how happy they are, and then he like pokes holes in their relationship, and it becomes really, really intense and really angry. And after about 20 minutes, it turns out they actually hate each other.
So would the point here be to break the couple up?
Essentially,
and
yes.
Not keep
how about
together?
A show called Race
exactly.
War, where
Gareth,
you actually have
you've had your moment.
Yeah,
it's all mine.
Okay, I'm just it's flowing. It's flowing.
And then you get like audience members, like ex-girlfriends, like bitchy mother-in-laws, that they could add their 5 cents in.
Yes.
I mean, this is going to be chaos.
Oh,
this is gold.
I see the jeopardy. Yeah.
All right. How about a show called Race War? You actually have two teams of black and white people, and you have them fight with almost the gladiators. But you have like the winning race this week was the blacks, and the winning race next week is the whites. Can you imagine the chaos that would cause?
I don't see that moving outside of South Africa, to be honest.
But here, people would be obsessed.
Yeah,
with it.
You're right.
The whites won this week.
I can't believe you just spoke over my idea with that crap.
Oh, shut up, Ben. Flax, you've got a great idea. I know it.
Okay, so this show is called The Purge. You take six families, put them up against each other. The winner gets maybe $5 million, whichever family's standing at the end of the day.
And what do they have to do? Kill each
other?
Well,
they got to purge.
But they actually got to kill each
other. Yeah, they got to kill each other.
Yeah, no. This is Hunger Games stuff. I came up with this years ago and they stole it.
I don't think that you can actually have people killing each other on television.
No,
just
it's
yet.
Not very BBC.
Not just yet. Yeah.
Ethically, there's a problem.
I guess.
I take it back. Not a great idea at all.
Okay, we trash that one, but then we go for something more therapeutic. Uh-huh. So it's a TV show around breaking things. So what it takes to break something. So like you take a phone and what it actually takes to break this phone. Like you put it through a pressure cooker.
Samsung
you
make it.
You put it through this and that. What it takes to break things.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good one.
No, I like that. That
like you take a Rolex.
Brit. I like that. Yeah.
What it takes to break a Rolex, stuff like that.
So come in and pitch it. What's your favorite show?
I do. I watch a lot of natural history, a lot of drama, and I like Fact Tent. I like you know things like Undercover Boss, Dragon's Den, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
That's but drama.
Stuff there. Yeah. Drama's good. You know what? That's another thing. I mean, I used to watch a lot of British comedy when I was younger. Yeah. And brilliant, brilliant people like Harry Enfield, who I still think people haven't fully appreciated the contribution he made and the shows like Spitting Image made back in, I know it wasn't a BBC show, but back in those days, they really fundamentally changed the way that satire is understood by modern society. They challenged authority in ways that authority wasn't used to being challenged. And they did an enormous amount that changed the entire landscape of society.
Yeah, and I mean, also he brought up Lily Allen, as you know, as his stepdaughter.
Absolutely, yeah.
Talking of rich kids, yeah. Right. So you're right. And I think British comedy resonates around the world. Comedy is an interesting thing because comedy doesn't always resonate. Yeah. But British comedy, I think its dryness... Particularly, I'll give you another example, The Office. That's the BBC show,
beautiful.
Which, again, has traveled around the world. Yeah. And you can adapt the scripts to make them work in each market. So I think British comedy is, you know, it's certainly got its place on the world arena. But I think British drama is probably first and foremost. I mean, Luther, Sherlock. I mean, we have War and Peace on BBC First recently. There was a great show we had called Dickensian. I don't know if you watched it. I mean, if you saw it on paper, you'd be like, oh, Dickensian. But what the writer did was he took all the characters from Dickens' novels from Oliver Twist to Hard Times through Christmas Carol, and he put them living in the same street and how they interacted with each other. And it was incredible. Wow. You know, you had a young Miss Havisham before she was jilted at the, you know, and then, and she was mixing around with Fagin and Nancy and
you want
it was
to meet
just
a young Miss Havisham, Mubs. Say hi.
Hi.
And I mean, just for young people, I mean, I don't know if that turns anybody on, but the writing around it was just incredibly clever and diverse.
But this is the other thing that you get to do at the BBC is you get to do stuff that refers back to the classics, and you get to, there's a huge British heritage there, literary heritage, a huge kind of a background that it all comes from, which means that it will find purchase a lot more easily.
Yeah. I mean, look at House of Cards. House of Cards was originally a BBC show, which America then adapted. But people don't know that.
No.
So I guess it's quite British just to sit back and just say, oh, you know, it's, that was ours, but, you know, off you go.
Some of the greatest shows, and some of the greatest, as you pointed out already, actors, script writers, cinematographers, just really, really talented people in many, many
But we've
places.
Got to be careful because, of course, we know that, you know, Britishness is a unique thing, but it might not resonate globally. So, for example, we partnered with Harvey Weinstein recently on a few things, and that's a partnership that BBC Worldwide really treasures. And I met Harvey last week, and he was, talking about, I mean, this guy, right, when you meet Harvey Weinstein, you forget that his work has been nominated for 300 Oscars, and he's won 90. And then,
wow,
and now he's partnering with us, the BBC, to make new dramas back into that sort of, on that level that I was talking about, which is $3 million an ep, you know, because that's what people want to consume right now, particularly with video on demand being sort of everywhere now. Even here, we've got Showmax and Netflix, and people want to binge watch. People want to sit and watch five episodes of a show. So, and that's really where we're catering to as well.
Well, listen, thank you for popping by to see us this morning. It sounds like really interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to all the new shows on offer from February, and we'll all be watching Planet Earth too.
Great. My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the Billionaires show as well. I'm definitely
going to be watching. Oh, Mubs is into all that stuff. Well, Billionaires season of programming on DSTV Channel 120, that's BBC Brit. Range of shows from super yachts, private islands, to flaunting what they have across social media. Be prepared to not just be entertained, but wowed by how the other half live. Didn't I read that like Robin Leach from Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? You remember that show?
I do. Yeah, I do.
They didn't know what I was talking about.
I'd love to watch that now because it seems like it's so like beige.
Parvenu. Yeah.
It's like this man has a £4 million house. And two Rolls Royces.
Well, Joel, thanks for coming to see us. Joel Churcher, everybody. He is the general manager for BBC Worldwide Africa and the vice president, too. So he knows his stuff. It's good to be in TV. It's exciting stuff.
It is, yeah.
Beats the hell out of, you know, auditing someone else's taxes. Right? Terrible job, that. Don't do an auditing show. That would really not work very well. The auditor off. Imagine a bunch of auditors trying to balance the books. I did it! I'm faster than you. I've got 5 cents left on the books. God, what a boring show. All right, very good. Thank you, Joel. Excellent stuff. That's all on BBC Brit and all the other channels too, 120 and DSTV.
This is CliffCentral.com.